Hello, hello. Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Breaking the Plane podcast, brought to you by Primetime Productions. Everybody go tuning in today, please go on Twitter and follow them at Primetime Prods. Welcome in, guys. This is the first episode of the Breaking the Plane podcast. We're going to talk all things football here on the pod here. I'm Burge. I'm on Twitter at Burge the Goalie. I'm here with my co-host, Joe Scherr. I don't know his Twitter handle off the top of my head, so I'll let him give that to you when he starts talking here. And I'm here also with Brennan Kojak Allen, who is our third chair slash producer for the podcast. He is on Twitter at Allen13Brennan. So give us all a follow. We'll be bringing you all sorts of football coverage throughout the year, mainly through the season, obviously talking about the games on Sunday, Monday, and Thursdays, as well as in the offseason following free agency, the draft. The draft will be a big one for us. I'm sure, I know my co-hosts here are big into college football, so we'll be doing some pods for that as well. And obviously mini camp, training camp, and the cycle will continue. So Joe, how you doing today, man?
Doing good. Thanks for bringing me on, Berge.
Good to have you here with us. And Kojak, how you doing out there?
Dude, living the dream, baby.
Living the dream. If that's what you want to call it, right? Yeah. I know you're out in the boonies for work right now.
I'm in the sticks.
Yeah.
I'm using my phone hotspot because there's no Wi-Fi in this dang hotel.
I don't envy you for that. And you know, today's my one day off of the week, so I spent the day with my kids. I fucked my shoulder up last night playing hockey. If you listen to the Two Pad Stack podcast with Primetime, you heard all about it last night when we recorded our episode after my hockey game. I'm sitting there wincing on camera with my shoulder. Every move I make, take a drink of my beer, I'm like ready to cry because it hurts so bad. But yeah, we're excited. We're excited to get into this. We're thankful for the opportunity with Primetime to be able to give you our takes on the NFL season. I know myself, I love talking NFL football. It usually pains my wife because she's usually one on the receiving end of it. So she's very happy that I have this outlet to come out and be able to talk to people that actually care about talking. Joe, how'd you get into watching football?
Obviously, not obviously to the listeners, but I started obviously a Patriots fan. First game I ever watched, Adam Vinatieri kicked a field goal in the snow to win a playoff game in Gillette. So I've been privileged ever since. Was obsessed with Tom Brady from a very young age. So a lot of my analysis, a lot of my takes are about quarterbacks and the passing game. Just something that's, I guess, I've focused on since I've started watching football. Just want to give a shout out to the Primetime guys giving us a shot. I know that they're up and coming and what they're trying to do. So appreciate them bringing us on at such an early stage. If you can find me on Twitter, I would appreciate if you just typed in Joe Scherr, Sher, and search me up. But if you can't find it that way, you can look me up @_. All right, write this down. @_ Juicy Jew. You can probably figure out how to phonetically spell that one. But yeah, just super, super amped to have an outlet for my takes. I can tell you guys when I go low in golf, which is probably once a millennia. And other than that, I'm just ready to get started. Got some good takes I want to get off my chest here. Try not to be too Pat-centric. I think we got some good stuff we want to talk about throughout the league. But obviously, the sky is falling into England.
Yes, yes. How about you over there, Mr. Kojak? How'd you get into football? And talk about a little bit what your role is going to be on this podcast.
Yeah, so I got an older brother. He's about 5 years older than me, and he always played football, and he's kind of my role model work growing up. So I played a lot of pretty much Pop Warner, middle school, high school. And my earliest memory is not so much the Raiders game, but it was definitely out of it. The first Super Bowl and that beautiful kick to seal the deal. And, 27 years old, I've been kind of spoiled growing up as a New England sports Patriots fan and a, New England sports fan. So
hey, you guys
definitely getting humbled right now.
you guys definitely are youngins, man. I'm a little bit older than both of you, so I remember a time when the Patriots were a little bit not the greatest thing. My earliest memory of the Patriots, obviously we're introducing this with the Patriots because we're all Patriots fans here, but my earliest memory is the 96 Super Bowl when you know, Drew Bledsoe took the team with Bill Parcells to play Green Bay and Brett Favre, and they obviously got Desmond Howard out of that building in that game. So that was my earliest memory, really, of watching football. I got into watching football. I watched John Elway. I was a big fan of those two Broncos. I was all about wanting them to win. I was only in like second or third grade when that happened. But obviously when the snowball game and Tom Brady took over, I had that guy's poster on my wall when I was a 12-year-old kid. And I obviously have been watching it ever since. So I do have a little bit of experience with what us Patriots fans are going through right now. Yeah. But it's been a very long time. And I was also a very young kid. So I'm also struggling a bit right now as well too. But thanks guys, and looking forward to getting into this week's topics with you. We're gonna start off here. We did put out a little Twitter post today to see if we get some questions from our, you know, the Twitter base, that regarding the NFL that's going on right now in the present. The first one comes to us from one of the primetime guys at Nick Melanson _ on Twitter. Nick Mel, we call him Mel here in primetime. His question is to you: what rookie quarterback are you most impressed with, CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson? Joe, I'll let you take it away first.
This was, I think we did a little test run last week, and I think we were all gushing about CJ Stroud, but we all came to the conclusion, I think we left it with, it's just 1 week. Let's see it happen again. And lo and behold, it did. I went back and watched it, and I think that the overall thing that I've seen from CJ Stroud, from when he's even at Ohio State using his NIL money to buy the entire team. I can't remember if it was Apple Watches or he bought him Rolexes or something. He bought the whole team something with all the NIL money, and he was basically like, "Yeah, I'm getting all these accolades, but it's obviously a team here. It's a team effort, and I wouldn't be anything without you guys." And I think it's a very important characteristic for a quarterback. I think being a leader is right up there with all the physical attributes you can have. People can run fast and throw far, but if you can't get a group of men to get behind you and try as hard as they can, I think that it doesn't really matter what you can do on the field between the lines. But some things I was very impressed with was D'Amico Ryans got this offense playing well. His offensive coordinator, the scheme seems to fit CJ Stroud's strong suits right now, which is mostly his accuracy and decision making. They're top 10 in the league in play action attempts. They have a really good young back in Damian Pierce, and then I think I forget who they're. They have another running back whose name is escaping me.
Devin Singletary.
Yeah, he's a good scat back. So they have a decent running game. Their offensive line is in shambles, but when they get good protection and they get rolling downhill, they seem to be productive. I can keep going here. I mean, I'm gushing about the guy. Like I said, his poise and decision making. He's very decisive. He's one, two, three, read and go. He's very accurate between the numbers, and I think the game plan kind of forces him that way. They don't throw a lot down the field outside the numbers. I think that it could have been in scheme, because I think the Steelers have a really good pass rush, which kind of like prohibits you from throwing down the boundaries and throwing kind of deep down the field and long developing plays. He's one of the best passers accuracy wise from 10 to 19 yards, which is the kind of those zip balls in the middle of the field, kind of got to have it kind of third down conversion plays. And I'll talk more about the rest of the Texans, but I think his release is great. His touch versus zip percentage is great. I think he really knows how to get the ball out and either decide if it needs to be kind of zipped in there between people or lofted over. And I think the last thing, not everything was great. Obviously, he's still a young developing quarterback. Mm-hmm. He throws a lot, like falling away over the middle. And I think that it could be part of his offensive line. I don't want to give him a complete out, but there was definitely a couple of times where he was short and low. And I think that it goes with, I don't think he has crazy arm strength, and he needs to be somebody who steps up into his throws and gets good zip on the ball, which he does if he has his feet under him.
Sure. No, I tend to agree with what you said here. You know, like we did, like you said, we had a little bit of a dry run last week when we were talking about this, and we were all kind of gushing over what CJ Stroud and those Texans were doing. They were a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people out of the gate here in the first month of the NFL season. And, you know, I love what he brings to the table. I mean, he does have a little bit of the rushing threat too, although you didn't see it against the Steelers this week, but he does have that mobility. You know, I, and if you saw his post-game press conference after the game where they absolutely demolished the Steelers, I love the confidence the kid brings. I mean, he's talking like, oh yeah, we sent those Steelers fans home. Like, screw them. Like, I love that. You need that as a, you know, with your quarterback, to be the leader of your team, and you need to, show off that confidence when you're talking to the media and everywhere. Let's not forget, like, Nico Collins is balling out with him. Like, Nico Collins has been great for the Texans there. The thing with Anthony Richardson, and we've already kind of seen it, the way he plays, he's a rushing quarterback. He's kind of like a Lamar Jackson type. He's a runner. He's already gotten hurt and missed a few games. Like,
you got always, on Sunday too.
We hear about it all the time that your best ability is your availability. And maybe that might be a New England thing, but I buy into that. Like, if you can't stay on the field, what good are you to me?
So quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, you need your quarterback to play week in and week out, and you need to know how to avoid the hits. And, you know, unless you're capable of taking them and getting back up and going back and playing, that's a big thing. And I'm very excited to see what this Texans team can do. I know the Steelers are not all that great this year. They have their own set of problems that I think we're going to get into here in a
good
little
defense,
bit. But their offense is absolute dog shit. So, you know, it's something to say that they blew them out, but at the same time, I think the Texans might have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs this year. And I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but that division is completely up for grabs. I mean, all four of the teams in that division are garbage. Indy, Houston, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. Like, Jacksonville preseason was the favorite to win that division. They were going to take the next step and go. And they themselves have been a little bit underachieving, I'd say, to this point. Obviously, I know they got the big win this week. In London with the whole Toy Story game going on with that, but you know, they haven't looked as much of a finely tuned machine as I think a lot of people thought in the preseason.
At least the passing game, yeah.
Yeah, you expected Trevor Lawrence, you know, to kind of live up to that hype that he was as a number one overall pick, and he's kind of been subpar. I'm not saying he's been bad, but like he hasn't elevated to that next level yet. So that division is still completely up for grabs. And I'm not ready to say, hey, put my money on the line and say, hey, the Texans are going to win that division, but string together another couple of weeks of this performances with their offense and, you know, winning games that they should win. You never know. Mm. So I'm with you on, I would take CJ Stroud at this point over Richardson, just because of, you know, if I'm going to dial it down, it's the availability part. CJ Stroud's not going out taking those monster hits that Anthony Richardson is taking. So,
yeah.
Well,
you brought up just triggered my memory a couple times. So another thing I looked up is the Texans are number two in the league in yards after catch. So, like, obviously we're fawning all over CJ Stroud right now, but I think the Texans put him in an excellent spot with, like we said, the stable of running backs. And then he has three above average young wide receivers with Alec Pierce, Nico Collins, and John Mechie played well on Sunday as well. The last thing you said, something that triggered, I have a couple things about Richardson here, that once again, they obviously they're scheming that thing like crazy to get him, the most productivity out of a young quarterback with his skill set. It's a lot of one read and go design quarterback runs, a lot of rollouts. I mean, he had his quick release and strong arm they're apparent on every single throw. The ball comes out at 900 miles an hour, which I think goes into the next thing, which is his accuracy issues. He's getting a lot better over the middle of the field, like kind of in that gotta have it kind of area. But I think everything he does is off platform, and a lot of the wow plays that he makes with his arm are off platform. So I think going forward, you really, really want to see him kind of like remain in the pocket a little bit more. I don't want to say negating like his ability to like make plays with his legs, but I think that when you get a team like that can get there with four, or at least contain you with four and drop seven, I think you're really going to need to see him like step up in the pocket and make some plays with his arm. And the last thing you said was the availability, and I think that's the number one thing. I have another bullet point here that says, is Richardson another Josh Allen, who's just a really incredible athlete, questionable decision making, but he can make it happen in many different ways. He can throw the ball downfield. He can make plays with his legs. He's a massive human. He's an absolute freak athlete. Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of similarities there. And Josh Allen really didn't pop until season three, and we're still trying to see him kind of eliminate some of those mistakes that I think Richardson is also making in his game.
Sure, sure. I'll definitely agree with that. And you know, I'm interested to see if Jonathan Taylor comes back to that offense, if they're able to mend that relationship, to see how that would change what we've seen through the first month. Like, are we going to see Richardson not have to take off and run 10 times a game? You know, like, they're going to be able to hand the ball off to Jonathan Taylor. He's still somewhat the same guy and can take that away from him, and they can more so develop Richardson to be more of a passer. I mean, you look at the game against the Rams here on Sunday. I mean, he was only 11 for 25 passing, mm-hmm. but he threw for 200 yards on those mm-hmm. 11. So you're averaging, you know, almost 20 yards a reception on that. So, I mean,
it's almost 10 yards an attempt, which is kind of the threshold. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you can kind of keep that in there, minimize the hits that the dude's going to take. Maybe in a month when we're recording here, you and I are going to have a different tune on this. You know,
yeah.
You know, to quote the talk radio station here locally, we're doing a show today.
Yeah.
So we're telling you what we see today.
Podcast comes out every week, whether exactly. you guys like it or not.
Exactly. I do want to pivot a little bit back to the Texans and the Steelers game.
Yeah.
And I want to touch a little bit on the Steelers. All right. What's going on with them? We know they have some playmakers on defense. All right. TJ Watt, Micah Fitzpatrick, they have those guys back there, but what is going on with that offense? That offense has talent. That offense has talent in my eyes. You got Najee Harris back there, running back. You have George Pickens. I know Deontay Johnson is hurt, but George Pickens has shined a little bit in his, you know, in his time being a number one receiver. What's going on with them? Is it Kenny Pickett? Is it Canada, the offensive coordinator? Is it Mike Tomlin? Who is it?
The blind leading the blind. It's kind of like what's happening in New England. I think the book's out on Kenny. He's limited. What I will say about Kenny Pickett is I would get in a street fight on his side at any day of the week. I would, if I was going to a bar saying I'm going to get in a bar fight and I need to bring one quarterback in the NFL, I might bring Kenny Pickett, because that dude wants all of the smoke that he can find from any defender. And he's like, he's lowering his shoulder to get first downs in the first quarter. He got hurt at the end of the game. So yeah. I guess you can see how that goes. I know it was on a sack, but like, I don't know. He has a little bit of like poor man's it factor. Like, he has it. He's just so limited physically. And I think that a lot of their success last year came from the running the ball. I think Najee got going at the end of the year. He's a serviceable running back. He's a good dual threat back. I still have to see he can break a tackle, but I still have to see the game breaking ability. I mean, if you're a first round running back, you have to be Saquon Barkley first or second year. You have to be Christian McCaffrey. You have to be somebody who just puts up numbers and productions. You can get the ball 30, 35 touches a game and your team still scores in the high 20s. Like, that's the first round running back. That's the running back you pay. That's the running back you honestly want with a young quarterback. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're relying on their defense to make every play. Their defense played well. It's not like they didn't, but I mean, when you're on the field for more plays than you're off of the field, that's going to wear you down. You're going to start making mental mistakes. And I think it was a really blatantly obvious one play later in the game where Nico Collins got the ball and it was like a out route, and he broke like four tackles, but they weren't like legitimate attempts at tackles. Mm-hmm. Like, it was pretty lackadaisical. And then the whole thing with Matt Canada is like, dude, can you, the thing that baffles me and like the most is, if you don't have like a special playmaker and a designed play to have open space, why are you throwing the ball short of the first down? Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't get the ball to this point, you have to either give the ball directly back to the other team or punt it back to the other team. Like, Why are you throwing it to your tight end in the flat 8 yards short of the first down? That makes no sense unless it's Rob Gronkowski on a schemed up play action rollout. Like, you know what I mean? Or Travis Kelce on some kind of schemed up like shovel pass. You know what I mean? Yep. Like throwing the ball short of the stakes, I think, is something that shows that you're A, scared of your passing game, and B, like, shying away from playmaking. Because it's not like – I don't know. Matt Canada is kind of not the best offensive coordinator, so I don't know if he's, like, making these calls. But, I mean, checking down on third and eight, third and 12, it was happening all over the place in this game. And watching Kenny Pickett throw it short of the sticks, like, late in that game when their defense is making, like, a couple – we were talking about C.J. Stroud, but the defense did make a couple of stops and try to get him back into that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know – it's not a successful day when your leading receiver is your running back and he has one reception for 32 yards. Okay. That's not a recipe for success. All right. I do follow a couple of Steelers guys on Twitter, and I do have a couple of friends that are big Steelers fans. And, you know, this is not new for Matt Canada. All right. This has been going on for a year plus at this point, where the fans are like, get this guy out of here. This guy doesn't know what he's doing, and he's holding the team back. The Steelers have the ability to identify talent when it comes to drafting and free agents. They're like a wide receiver machine, as far as I'm concerned.
Who's that number 19 that was making a couple plays out there? I can't remember. He's number 19. He's another little guy.
Calvin Austin. Like, Austin the third. Yep.
He was making plays. It's like, dude, where are they getting these guys from?
They find a way to identify that, and they find a way to make it work. So that's why I'm looking at it. Like, I talk shit to Steelers fans all the time because I got friends that are like it. I'm like, oh, the Patriots will be better than the Steelers this year. Looks like they're kind of in the same boat at this point.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be worse, like, I guess. Not
exactly. And to be honest with you, if the Steelers are worse than the Patriots, that's on them, man. They have way more talent and way more explosive playability on that offense than the Patriots do. So George Pickens, I think, is him if he keeps his attitude right. I really do believe that he can be like that next. He's drawing comparisons to Antonio Brown because of his attitude, but I think he could be like that next receiver for them. Deontay Johnson, when he's healthy, he's a target catch hog for that team. So, you know, obviously, I think they're missing him right now. I think Pat Freiermuth, their tight end, shout out from Massachusetts, my wife's hometown from Haverhill. Went to the same high school, but he got hurt, and that's a big loss for them, in my opinion. I had big high hopes for him this year, just from a fantasy football perspective. I drafted him in a bunch of my leagues. I'm like, this guy's going to be the next guy, and you know, obviously
he got young quarterback, like a tight end. Yep.
He got hurt, so that's not good for them. I mean, I haven't seen any reports about Kenny Pickett going in, you know, at the end of the week. Obviously, we're recording here on October 3rd on Tuesday, so I'm sure we'll get some updates as the week goes on here to see where, you know, he's going to fall in terms of the injury report. I don't know what's up with the Steelers. They are 2-2, and, you know, they're in a division where the Bengals are absolutely puking on themselves, wetting their pants, and, you know, they're not the same team that they were a year ago, clearly. There's an opportunity there for them. They only have the Ravens and the Browns to compete with. There's an opportunity there for the Steelers to kind of steal some games and maybe squeak into the playoffs. But they got to fix what's going on there. And I think that firing their offensive coordinator and letting somebody else just have a shot at it might be the way to go. And, you know, at the end of the day, it falls on the head coach. And, you know, we'll see. Tomlin did say in his press conference that changes are going to be made. We'll see what those changes are and as the week goes on and the season goes on here. But, you know, we can talk all day about, you know, coaching mishaps and, you know, being upset with where things are. And this I like this kind of segue here into, you know, what we witnessed on Sunday with the New England Patriots. And, you know, we're all three of us here are passionate Patriots fans. And I promise you, we are not a Patriots podcast. We are an NFL podcast here, and we will control any tangents we go on when we start ranting and raving about our team here. But yeah, let's get into it. Let's get into it here. The Patriots lost, 38-3. I stopped paying attention a little bit in the fourth quarter there, but it was like 38-3 against the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. What the hell happened with this one, Joe? What the hell happened? I had this team being a competitive in this game, and I actually thought there was a chance that they were going to actually squeak one out. They might be able to steal this win. Boy, was I wrong. They sucked. They absolutely sucked. It was probably one of the worst games that I've seen. And, you know, we all lived through 2020 with Cam Newton, and there were some pretty bad games in that season. This one, I mean, my God, nothing went right for this team.
Yeah, it's – all right, I'm just going to try to compartmentalize here and let the takes go instead of letting the emotions go. We talked about – I said a lot about how CJ Stroud's composure and his, like, his body language, how he conducts himself on and off the field. It's just the complete opposite in New England with Mac Jones. I've been a huge Mac Jones defender. Mm-hmm. I've been a believer. It's one of those things where you're just trying to manifest and trying to make sure your eyes aren't telling the truth, and you're just trying to believe. And it's just, it's not there. I know probably one of the worst offensive line performances of all time. Your best offensive lineman, who happens to be a guard, which is never good, but Onwenu is, it looks like he's never played football before. Mm-hmm. Mac gets, as soon as the strip sack comes, he just gets sped up and everything is cooked. And the thing with Mac is he's supposed to be the cerebral guy. He's supposed to be the NFL mm-hmm. ready guy. He's supposed to be the good decision maker. He's supposed to be accurate. He's supposed to be getting the ball out, making the correct read. And it's just none of that happened. It's tough when you're getting the least amount of separation in the league. The Patriots receivers are last in the league in average a separation per route. It's just so bad. And when you compound that with losing your best two players, probably your best two players on the team, your easily. Best two defenders in Judon and Gonzalez. I know Judon was kind of late, but you go in there with three corners, you leave with two. As soon as Gonzalez goes out, they go to CeeDee Lamb over the top. It's just you don't usually see the Patriots getting out coached and out classed and out prepared. And it's just, it seemed like, not like you said, nothing went right. Out coached, out prepared, out played, out efforted. It was all just bad, 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 bad. I think we can get into this at a different point, but I think that it's not Mac Jones. It's not Bill Belichick. It's not the offense. It's all of it. It's all bad. It's nothing. Nothing is making anything better. It's all making each other worse.
I agree with you 100%. And I, like you, have been a Mac stan, if you want to call it that. I've been like, all right, we're going to see something here. He put out a good solid rookie season. You know, with Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator, they made the playoffs. They obviously got walked out of the playoffs, which a lot of people expected. And, you know, obviously last year with the whole coaching carousel, offensive coaches who are defensive coaches, it looked like an absolute shit show. And, you know, we go into this year, you got an absolute, you know, a real offensive mind back with the team, Billy O'Brien, calling the plays. I don't put this loss on him per se, because you are with a new offensive coordinator. It does take time. I will say it does take time, and it's not three games in the preseason that is going to, you know, be able to make this thing a finely tuned machine. And, you know, I do think that they will get better. I just don't know how much. Obviously you can't really get much worse than Sunday. Yeah. It was Bill Belichick's worst loss in his 29-year head coaching career. And, you know, it can't get worse. It can't get worse. If it gets worse, we're talking Tank City here. We want number one overall. We want a high draft pick to be able to get some talent in here. You know, with Mac, I mean, after that, the first drive, they look fine. They look fine. They drove down the field. You know, Pop Douglas had a big, I think it was 42-yard catch, you know, down the sideline there, but they stalled in the red zone. I wish they would have gone for it on fourth and one there. What do you got to lose? You're 1-2. Like, you're on the road. Give it a shot.
Yeah, they were great on fourth down on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know.
they were fucking horrible, dude.
They can't even execute the
tush push. They can't even do the tush push, dude. Us three could probably convert a first down there.
You know, and the big thing for me with the Patriots offense is I want to sit here and I want to put it solely on Mac, because he's the quarterback. He's the leader. He had probably his worst game as a pro on Sunday. In my opinion, it was his worst game as a pro, because, like you said, his cerebral, the mental game, he's supposed to be able to make those decisions well. I don't know if it was one of the pick sixes, but it was one of his interceptions. He threw halfway across the field to Kendrick Bourne on a play, one or two plays before that. And it worked. Barely worked.
Yeah.
It should have been picked on that play.
Yeah.
And then what does he do? He goes back to it again. He doesn't have the arm strength to make that happen. And lo and behold, it was an interception, you know, whatever. The game was already over before that happened, in my point. You know, so my thing with them is the lack of a running game. And you can put this on Ramondre Stevenson all you want. But if your offensive line is not getting the push that it needs to spring that runner, you're not going to have a running game. And this team is built run first. They were last year. They were the year before. We're going to run the ball. We're going to run the rock. We're going to pound it. And we're going to wear you down. And then we're going to pull a play action out of our ass at some point and go over the top on you.
Yeah, bottom half of the league in play action percentage.
Which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous because that's
especially with the young quarterback.
What they are spent on. And you know, I put number one blame on the fact that they cannot run the ball. But at the same time, if you run the ball and you have a play action, your receivers aren't getting separation on a play action. So a play action isn't gonna work unless it's Farrell Brown, somebody who a defense
busted
is completely
coverage. Yeah,
busted coverage, somebody they're not even caring about them, and it's gonna work. So they gotta figure something out. And I honestly went into the season thinking they were going to be better than what was advertised and what we were hearing out of camp and everything like that. Right now, as of today, I don't see it. You can say it's one game. You can say it's one game. They sucked. They didn't show up. We've seen it over the last 20 years where they have these brain farts and they just come out and they just lay an absolute egg. But you don't have Tom Brady as a quarterback to come back and do it. And I don't think Mac's it. I think he's it for this year because Zappe definitely isn't it. And, you know, Will Greer, who is the emergency third, I wouldn't mind giving him a look at some point, but I don't know. I just think that there's so much wrong with the offense, and the defense now is going to take a massive hit with those injuries. Matt Judon got hurt in garbage time. The game was over. Yep. They'd already benched Mac at that point. Why is Matthew Judon on the field? Why is he out there? That's a coaching problem. That's a Bill problem. And he shouldn't have even been out there as far as I'm concerned. And he is. Now you're going to lose him probably for the year. He says he wants to come back, but you know, you tear a bicep. You got to have surgery on it.
Dude, he might be done as a Patriot after they redid his contract, dude. There's no guaranteed money left.
That's an absolute, I put that as a worse loss than Christian Gonzalez, because we do have Jack Jones coming back off PUP. I got to think that they put him on PUP because he missed so much time due to his criminal charges. But that's a whole nother topic. We won't even get into that. But
my client is proven innocent.
Exactly. You know, they're going to get some help and some depth back. Jonathan Jones hopefully will be back sooner than later. He's already missed more time than I thought he would. I'm kind of confused as to why they didn't put him on IR. He's going to miss three, possibly four games. They should have just put him on IR and get somebody else on the field on the active roster that could play, but they're going to get help at that position. They ain't going to get another Matthew Judon out there. So
hopefully Keon White steps up. That'd be the only silver lining here. It would be a real long look at him.
He's looked good. He's looked good in the time. I mean, you saw them take a knee and he went, I think it was at halftime, and he was the guy
he went right through the
line. And he's like, yeah, get out of here.
You get walked off the field.
Exactly. So
I kind of love that though.
Absolutely.
Why did Pop Douglas play 18 plays? Why isn't Keon White in a more like defined role? Like, yeah, why? I mean, Christian Gonzalez is more of a necessity thing and he's a first round pick, but like, I don't get the personnel decisions. But speaking of personnel, dude, the Cowboys, if you could get some kind of operation in there that wasn't Mike McCarthy eating Funyuns, like, dude, they're legit, dude. They're friggin' legit, dude. Tony Pollard's good. CeeDee Lamb is good. Dak is all right. I think he's in a good situation. But, dude, Micah Parsons is, dude, like, he's the new like Aaron Donald. He's the new TJ JJ Watt, dude. He is the best defender in the NFL. He's better than all the other pass rushers. He can line up anywhere on the defensive line, and he's an absolute game wrecker even in the running game. You can kind of run at the Watt brothers a little bit. You can kind of run at those guys. There's a couple guys in the league that you can run at, but even sometimes you can say it about Judon. But dude, Micah Parsons is an absolute freak, dude. There was a play where he was working on, I think it was City Show, and Ramondre Stevenson comes to chip, the running back comes to chip.
Yep.
He uses the momentum of the chip, sees the chips coming, uses the momentum of the chip to go around City Show and the guard next to him to get between the guard and center to get some pressure up the middle. It's like, that's just absolute freak athleticism. I don't know. I think the game says 10 times more about the Patriots than it does the Cowboys. But, I mean, the Cowboys can't score in the red zone. The book's out on that one. Dak.
They run into each other.
Yeah, dude. Dak, I don't know, dude. Something's still there with him. And I don't know. It just says the Patriots, like, they played so friggin' bad on one side of the ball that it affected all the other areas of the game, including special teams.
I would have been furious if Micah Parsons was available at 15 in the 2021 draft and the Patriots took Mac Jones over Micah Parsons. I wanted Micah Parsons so bad in that draft, and I was like, take Micah Parsons in the first round, take Kellen Mond in the second.
Yeah.
Worry about the quarterback after, because that guy was a freak at Penn State. And, you know,
he played off the ball at Penn State, didn't he?
Yeah.
He played middle linebacker
beast. And, yeah, you know, it's a great story because, you know, he grew up a Cowboys fan, and, you know, to see him get drafted by his team and to ball out like he is.
Yeah.
Like he is, I 100% agree with you. He's absolutely the next big thing defensively I think he's going to be defensive player of the year this year. Oh. He absolutely deserves it. You know,
dude, he got hurt and came back in this game, dude. That's what I love seeing that. I don't know why.
They were blowing him out and he came back in. Like, yeah, dude.
He's still in his rookie deal and he comes back in the game during a game that you're winning handily. You know what I mean? Like,
he's a baller. He's an absolute baller. I love the way he plays and he carries himself. I love reading his tweets on Twitter.
Oh, you know?
He's a likable guy and he's an absolute baller on the field. But, you know, going back to the game, like, what about what you mentioned about Mike McCarthy, you know, eating Funyuns on the sideline? And I'm going to pose this question to you, Kojak. Why is Mike McCarthy wasting a fake field goal on an extra point in a game where they're absolutely blowing out the New England Patriots?
It pissed me off so bad.
You were in attendance at the game. You were at the game.
I'm never going to another Patriot game again.
He was at the game, and he got to witness that.
In the 300 sections of AT&T Stadium.
The kick to the ball.
It happened like in front of me and like down, and I was just watching it, and I was like, that dude's 600 pounds. And
rumbling,
I just thought it was incredibly disrespectful.
It absolutely was.
Just a big fuck you.
It was a big FU, you know, it really was. And, you know, I, you know what, more power to them. They got their asses handed to them last week by Arizona. So they're out there trying to prove something. I just, as a head coach, why aren't you saving that for a play? I was just going to say, why aren't you saving that for a play where you're going to fake a field goal to do that?
I think that was the counter, the Shuler, line of scrimmage run.
They did say that. Yeah.
I definitely agree with that.
But
it's just like another why aren't the Patriots one step ahead like they always are? Like, how is Mike McCarthy a one step ahead of the Patriots? And it's concerning, dude. It's very concerning as a Patriots fan.
It absolutely is. But like, when you think about them, they wasted it. They wasted that play in a meaningless game. And
can say the same about the Pats too. I wish they could have used that to win a playoff game or upset somebody in the playoffs with the run-in thing.
Absolutely. And you know, I heard this on one of the talk radio stations. Like, why are you wasting that play to gain an extra point like 1 point. You went from an extra point to a 2 point conversion on that.
Oh, dude, I didn't even think about it that way too. Yeah, you could get four more.
You get four more. There's a 4 point differential if you're kicking a field goal from that point and you pull that out in a game, probably in a game that's more meaningful, maybe against the Eagles or against a divisional opponent.
Yeah.
Why are you putting that on film now? Because now teams are going to be like, we're going to look for it. Just like every team is looking for the schooner play, the schooler play.
Which is why we got that play on Sunday, yeah.
Exactly. So, like, that's my opinion on it. It was a great play, and if that had been 5 yards back, Dietrich Wise is gonna catch him there. Like there was a big fat guy
running to Ben Watson, dude.
Exactly. You're gonna see him get caught there, and if anything had gone wrong, that's not gonna be a point. And then there's a momentum swing for the Patriots. But again, it wouldn't have mattered. Yeah. But if you're trying to do that to get four extra points. Yeah, hell yeah. Take that risk at that point. So yeah. that's kind of where I sit, Coach Jack. You just put something.
Have you ever been to a Pats game? And I mean, probably not, since we win all the time besides the past 5 years. But like, have you ever been to a Pats game and we're just getting shit on so bad that I saw two Pats fans take their jerseys off up in the 300 sections, take their jerseys off and just absolutely huck.
I mean, he's going in and out. But okay. Perfect timing.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine wasting $200 and throwing my jersey into the stands to be.
Oh, I took a bath on my ticket. I took a bath on my ticket, but I was like, I'd rather have half the money and not go.
Talks up a Julian Edelman jersey.
Oh my god! It made no sense. A Julian Edelman jersey.
Both of them were Julian Edelmans.
Oh no, dude.
That's a memory.
What did Jules do? What the hell did Jules do to anybody on Sunday?
Really, the whole section went bonkers, though. Of course, but it's like multiple Super Bowl winners, Super Bowl MVP, and he's going to toss his jersey into the crowd of Cowboys fans, which you'll never see back again.
Exactly.
So, I don't know if you guys have ever seen something like that, but that shit blew my mind.
I've never seen it. I personally have never seen that because I've the only game I've seen outside of Gillette is in MetLife, and it was the year that, you know, the Malcolm Butler interception happened. I went to MetLife. I got free tickets, and obviously we were just sitting up there with Jets fans, just talking with them, and it was actually a good experience. So like there was nobody was getting pissed off at each other. Like I was just, we were chirping the Jets fans in front of us. They were chirping us, but it was like all in good fun. It was one of those things where like nobody gets pissed off and starts fighting anybody.
Dude, Jets fans are great. I think I hate the Jets with a burning passion, but like Jets fans are all right. And the grand scheme, they're like, they're not Philly or Buffalo or anything,
but you got to think about the Jets. Like that's a cursed franchise, and they had the butt fumble, and they've had these colossal collapses. So like, I get that. And like, I had a great experience down there. It was awesome. But I can't imagine taking my jersey off and throwing it into the crowd. I would take it off, but I'd hold on to it. I wouldn't throw it in the crowd. Like, I don't even know if I, you know what, to be honest with you, I don't even know if I would take it off because, you know, I'll support my team till I die. I'm wearing a Devontae Parker jersey. So shout out to my son here. You know, my son's name's Parker. So I got a Parker jersey with his name on the back. So
straight yeeted the jersey into the fans. Never seen it again. Because we were in the 400. So, like, we were like, there's probably like 50 rows and we were at like 20, like pretty much halfway. And he hucked it and he went over the railing into the next, like the 300 circles. So there's zero chance you're getting that back.
That's a drunk idiot right there.
Dude, imagine being in like the lower bowl. You're in the lower bowl, just hammered off Miller Lights, and then a freaking Julian Edelman jersey descends upon you. And you're like, what the hell is going on here?
I'm gonna keep this.
Exactly. And they had like white towels with the Dallas Star on every single seat. And I got to my seat and I picked it up, crumbled it, and just hucked it. I was like, I'm good. And then we didn't score a touchdown, so I was like, sweet.
And then he went and found it and started waving it.
Well, it was Shy, who's a Jets fan, and he was a Cowboys fan the whole day. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to physically assault you. Like, you're not a Cowboys fan.
It's
going to
be one of those videos on Twitter and on Barstool.
You saw that with the Chargers-Raiders game? Those two fans that got into it? And the
was
Chargers
it the two chicks?
Went, sleep, sleep. No, the two dudes.
The Raiders, there was an awesome chick fight in the Raiders game, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dude, we've been seeing a lot of that this year. It seems like it's more than years past where these fans are just fighting. Dude, I've seen I think it was a 49ers game, and they might have been playing I don't remember who it was that they were playing, but like a dude grabbed a girl by her hair and threw her down the steps. Yeah, I'm like, dude, Roonies. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're here to watch a game. Like, I have no patience for that. And me, obviously, as a dad, like, if I'm at a game with my kid and I have to, like, expose my kid to, like, physical violence. We talked about it on the Two Pad Stack Pod last night about fans getting in fights at games. And we're like, dude, like, you could swear all you want. Like, I'm not going to get mad about that if my kid's going to hear the F-bomb or, you know, shit. Fuck ass, whatever.
That's the arena you want to hear
yeah,
it in.
You know, yeah. You're gonna hear it. You're gonna hear it. Literally. I'm like, okay, I can tell him that's not okay, and you know, try to raise him the right way. And even though I'm probably one of those guys that's gonna be swearing out there, but you know, at the same time, but once you get physical and you start getting near me with my kid, that's where I draw the line. It's like, dude, like, come on, you're there to watch a game. What are we doing here? You know, like, why you want to get arrested because you're watching a game or your team's losing? Like. You're a pathetic human being at that point, yeah. In my opinion. Yeah. But
it's just like, it's so funny though. It's just, it's so weird sometimes. Cause like, I remember being at when I was younger, this is like right when I got out of college, I went to a Celtics playoff game. It was Game 7 versus the Bucks the year that Jason Tatum was a rookie and Brown was in his like second year. And they like made it all the way to Game 7 versus LeBron. But a series or two before that, they played Milwaukee 7-game series, Game 7 at home. I think I don't know if it was Game 7. No, it was Game 7 at home because I met Dave Portnoy after. He was just screaming. He was on Causeway Street just screaming, feed me Bron Bron, feed me Bron Bron. And yeah, Bron Bron ended up ending that season again for the Pats. Anyway, dude, we were in – dude, it's like Game 7 in the Garden. And like me and my like then roommate are like screaming and yelling at the top of our lungs. So aren't the guys behind us like in the 300 section at the guard, like, and at Boston sporting events, like you're all brothers in arms at that point. Mm-hmm. Like you are, like if you sit next to me at that game, you are my brother. And my roommate was like yelling at one point, and the guy in front of us was like, hey, can you like quiet down? And before me and my buddy even had a chance to like say anything, and he goes, the game's on for free at home, get the fuck out of here. And it's like, it's so true. It's just like, there's such a fine line. It's just like, you're not gonna go to a game and grab a bitch by the weave and throw her down a flight of stairs, but you're obviously not gonna like it, like you're there to be a fanatic, like fans is yep. Like fanaticism, like that's, you're a fanatic. Like the definition of fanaticism isn't normal. Like it's not a normal thing. Like you're not like, but you need to keep it on the rails, dude. And it's so weird. I mean, I mean, I'm no one to talk. I mean, in my younger days or even a couple years ago, it's like I could be liable to be in that situation. I've never got kicked out of a game yet, but
that's a good thing.
But it's just, it goes to show that like, dude, sporting events is just such a like a atmosphere of like mm-hmm. high emotions now. It's like so weird. It's like it's such a change. Like I remember like going to like hockey games with like the Bruins versus the Rangers, and like my dad like introducing me like, these are our enemy. These are Rangers fans, but they're good guys and we're not going to fight them. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's like so different. It's much, much, much different now.
Yeah, you start throwing,
it's like
the
that
slurt.
Hall of Fame photo you got from the Jumbotron when you're in the 300 section and you're just like this.
I was trying to get them to look at the little kid next to me.
Joe
Scherzer
all the way up, all the way up against the brick wall, and the Jumbotron is just Joe Scherzer's straight face, and he's just Hall of Fame photo.
That was pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, I think we all agree on the whole fighting at sporting events thing here. But I, again, just in closing on this before we move on, don't waste your jersey at a game. You spend a lot of money. You work hard for your money. Don't freaking huck
it
into the
stand. Little kid, dude. If you want to not be a fan of the team, dude, see a little kid walking out, be like, yo, here's Julian Edelman's jersey. You know what I mean?
Take it. Keep it. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, if a Devontae Parker jersey is one thing, you know, that's fine. But if it's an Edelman jersey, I'm kidding.
Okay. It would be way more egregious if you didn't have a son named Parker.
Exactly.
I think he got the jersey before his son was born, but we'll talk about that at a different point in time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Babe, we have to name him Parker. Why? We haven't even talked about this name yet. Well, see, I have this delivery from Fanatics that I can't return.
You're not going to – dude, I manifested that trade. I was like, this dude needs to come to New England because my son is named Parker. He was already born. Bad. I'm like, I manifested. I'm like, they're going to trade for him. They need to do it. And the minute they did, I was like, let's go. And actually, my in-laws got me the jersey.
My in-laws got it
for me for Christmas. So I'm like, you know what? No matter what, dude, I can frame this jersey. I don't care how bad he is, how much he sucks when he plays with the Patriots. I can frame this jersey and say, hey, there's a guy that played for the Patriots when you were a little kid. That had your name on it.
Yeah.
So that's
one really good catch versus the Bears.
Exactly. You know, so it is what it is. And I'm happy still on the team just so I can actually wear it. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it would be framed at this point.
Yeah.
But I think we've kind of hit the threshold for the Patriots talk for this episode here. You know, we're all pissed off. We all want to see changes. We all want to see some improvement.
And the Cowboys are good. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, the Cowboys are good. I still think that they're going to, you know, down the stretch here, they're going to, you know, they'll wet themselves down their leg like they always do. Typical franchise, typical, you know, of Mike McCarthy as head coach. Yeah, exactly. But I do want to get into the Sunday night game that occurred between the Jets and the Chiefs here.
Yeah.
You know, I caught a little bit of it, you know, on Sunday night after my trip to the fair. And I just want to say, I want to give the Jets a little bit of credit, you know, going into that game against the Chiefs. Everybody thought the Chiefs were going to stomp them. You know, I think, Joey, that was your lock when we did our dry run last week.
Dude, Mahomes should be in a fucking prison cell, dude.
Exactly. I think we saw something from the Jets defense in that game. They're like, we're not going to go down without a fight here. And, you know, and I'll say this too. Zach Wilson actually had himself a day. He actually played really well in that game. And unfortunately, you know, for him, with that late fumble, kind of sealed the deal for the Chiefs. And, you know, he was a man about it. He took responsibility for it. And all that, you know, we crap on Zach Wilson all the time. You know, especially as Patriots fans, it's like, oh, Zach Wilson's coming to town. We got a W. He can't beat us. And, you know, we already had it once. I'm not sure we'll see it again, you know, when they play him later in the season. But, you know, you never know. But I do want to say, like, I'm very impressed with what the Jets did. They basically pushed the Chiefs to the brink there. And, you know, I think it was 23-20 was the final. And, you know, and this brings me to my overlaying point of wanting to talk about this game is the NFL officiating, you know, late in that game. I think it was 3rd and 22. Mahomes dropped back to pass. An absolutely blatant hold on, I think it was the right guard or the right tack or the left.
One where he was standing back there for like 5 minutes and the dude's just in a fucking chokehold.
Yeah. And he took off for 25 yards and got the first down on 3rd and 22. I'm like, dude, that was the absolute most blatant hold call that I've ever seen.
Nobody also wants to hit that dude either.
Right. Exactly. Because you never, you know, you're going to get flagged for it. And, you know, it just comes to it like this year, and you can bitch about the officials all you want as, you know, as fans of your team. But like this year, it just seems like the refs are making these critical missed or bad calls at critical points late in games. And I truly believe that the NFL has an officiating problem. And, you know, I've seen it watching the Patriots games where, again, I'm not sitting here telling you that the Patriots lost because of the officials, because they didn't. In any of the games that they've lost this year, but they have been in points where it's like, dude, like they get one call. All right. Maybe they pull out a game. And some of the calls that have happened in these critical moments of the NFL games this year have been just blown or wrongly called. And I really do believe that the NFL has to do something to address this problem because, you know, we've seen it happen in the playoffs. You know, you look back, I don't know, 6-7 years ago with the Saints and the Rams, that blown PI call that was missed, that cost the Saints the game against the Rams. And I think that was the year that
CJ Gardner Johnson one. And then they made it like a the Saints petitioned to make it like the Saints and the Rams petitioned to make it like a reviewable. Yeah.
Which absolutely fell on its face. That didn't work. That didn't work. They're not going to change their calls on that. But like, something's got to give with this. I'm sick and tired of seeing like these big games, you know, have these blown calls that end up factoring into the result. You can say what you want about any team. You're taught from a young age in any kind of sport, any sport that you play, never rely on the officials. So if you never want to be in a position at the end of a game where you need a call to be done right, and it's going to go the other way, you never want to be in that spot. But at the same time, it's like, dude, you're playing at the highest level of the sport. How can you not get those calls right?
should have the highest level of officiating.
Exactly. It pisses me off. And it's like, dude, make the right call. Like, that was a blatant hold. You get two officials staring at it.
Yeah.
It's like, make the call. And for the last 20 years, what did we always hear? Patriots always get the calls. They always get the calls. Well, guess what? It's transferred to Kansas City now. You see them getting it. It happened twice. There was a questionable hold call on an interception of Mahomes in that game Sunday night, too.
That was a hold.
By the letter of the law, it is. But
the suspicious part of that play is when the ref throws the penalty, mm-hmm. when he throws the flag. If people following along at home still, Sauce Gardner makes contact with the receiver, and then the ball goes over those two players' heads to the player behind him who picks him off. And the flag doesn't come out right when the hold happens. The flag comes out after the Jets player comes down with the interception, which leads me back to what I was going to say when you were going on your diatribe about the officiating. I want to say it's a new thing, but I think the reason why that, like, A, we're paying attention to it more, or B, it might be, I don't want to say a reason, but maybe a contributing factor is, dude, the NFL is legitimately in bed with these casinos and these sports books mm-hmm. now. Like, dude, you know how much, you know, how, like, you, there was probably a weird handle on the game, and that's why, I don't know. And the whole, it brings me back to what my lock of the week was last week, which was the laying the 9.5 with the Chiefs. And it's like, you can, I know it's the right, I guess, football move, but dude, if you're up 10 points with less than a minute left, dude, like, you're going to win that game 100 times out of 100. And if you go down before the line to run the clock out, you're going to win 100 times out of 100. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that you, like, it's in the spirit of the game and stuff like that. But, like, I don't know. Like, you even have, what about the Nick Chubb play a couple of years ago where he's home free and he just dives on the ground. And it's like, I don't know. I'm just, like, sour about my bad beats, but it's like, it's something to take a look at. It's like, I don't know. It may be whatever. You can't say causation without there's some kind of fancy term you can put there with that. But I don't know. The fact that gambling comes around and then these refs start making questionable calls, I don't know. It's not something you can't ignore.
Yeah. It is what it is. But, like, I want a good product on the field when I watch the sport. Like, I had no skin in the game. Like, the Jets win. Like, obviously, it may impact my team, my Patriots, their position in the divisional standings. But at the end of the day, like, I don't care who wins that game. Like, I just want to watch football. And this kind of stuff gives credence to, you know, the conspiracy theorists out there that are saying that the sport is rigged. All right. That there's a script, quote unquote. I don't believe that. I never will believe that, because it will absolutely deter me from watching football from here on out. Mm-hmm. If it turns out to be true, but, like, it gives credence to those assholes that are out there saying, oh, it's a script, it's all this and that, and, you know, it's just like wrestling where it's all scripted. Why give those idiots a platform to stand on? You're giving them backup to it. You know, you could argue that them missing that call on that 3rd and 22 with Mahomes, that, hey, they wanted Mahomes to win the game, so they're gonna let that one go. With officiating, like, if there's, like, a soft hold in late in a game, like, on, we'll use the Sauce Gardner example here. If they're letting that go all game, you better let it go in that fucking moment.
Yeah.
Like, I got no problem with the game dictating how they call the game. So, like, I got no problem with them missing calls like that late in games. If it's called consistently throughout the game, let it go. Mm. And I say the same thing about when I watch hockey. You know, I play hockey too. Like, as I talked about my nice little bum shoulder here, but you know, there's times in the NHL where they let that shit go. They let it go late in games. They let it go in overtime. Yeah. And it's like, you know what? You call the game consistently throughout the way. Then you have credence to let it go. Like, this is how we called the game. Yeah. It might've been a hold or a slash in hockey or a hook in hockey. But, like, if you let it go and you call it consistently all game, then nobody should have a problem with it at that point. So if they're consistent the whole game and they let those holds go on 3rd and 22 the whole game, again, I didn't watch the whole game, so I don't know if that was the case. If they let that go all game, fine. I'm okay with them letting that go. But if you're going to call it in that big moment, just, or let it go in that big moment, just because Patrick Mahomes or Sauce Gardner holding, you know, on a big play late in the game, that's where I draw the line.
I think it's almost like the NBAification of the NFL. Like, all the quarterbacks are the most important players, so they're getting all the calls. Like,
yep.
When the Patriots used to have Tom Brady, I was not bitching about that, but I will now. But that brings, I saw a funny anecdote on Twitter about this game. It's just like, it's so funny that we bring the Taylor Swift and the Swifties into the football world, and now they all think that Zach Wilson's the franchise quarterback.
Don't even get me started on the whole Taylor Swift thing, man. I'm sick.
Did you like the first ad of that first cut after they went to her? It's like her face on the commercial right after. I was like, oh, I wonder who's getting a cut of the cheese here.
I gotta give you props. That was a great segue right there. I gotta give you props that. You know, our first episode, you know, releasing to the public here. That was a great segue there. Dude, I'm sick and tired of hearing about it. And I'm sick and tired of seeing ESPN and Adam Schefter tweet, oh, Taylor Swift is in the house. Like, I'm not a Taylor Swift fan.
Travis Kelce slept over Taylor Swift's house last night. Like, what is he doing?
I don't care. I'm a football fan. And, you know, it's the same thing. If that happened in New England, dude, I'd be pissed. I'd be pissed if my team ended up having to deal with something like that. Like, it's not just because I'm not a fan of her music or I'm not a fan of her in general. Like, if anything like that were to come into it, it's like, dude, we're here to watch a fucking football game.
Yeah.
We're here to watch a football game. Stop panning to a Grammy award winning artist every play. Like, yeah. Every
reminds
play
me of the Jessica Simpson, Tony Romo shit.
Yeah, it's the same thing. And it was like, dude, like, why are we doing this? We're here to watch football. I'm sick of listening to it. And I really don't want to see it anymore because, like, it's going to be a thing until they break up and she writes a song about them breaking up. But, like, you know, it's we're going to have to deal with it all year because the Chiefs are going to be a contender. They're going to be in the playoff picture and she's going to be there at a playoff game. We're going to be sitting there watching playoff NFL football and they're going to be panning to Taylor Swift in the box with Brittany Mahomes and whatever other celebrity is up there. It's like, dude, I don't give a flying fuck. I don't care. Yeah. I want to watch football. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it.
I will say
I'm passionate about it. So go ahead.
I will say the best thing about the Taylor Swift things is like people like you getting so fired up. I find it so funny. Like, it's so funny. This like absolutely benign, like pop music star. Like, she's not like divisive. You know what I mean? She doesn't like, quote unquote, stand for anything. She doesn't like, the only thing she's divisive for is she has a fan base that will literally murder you. And like,
exactly.
So, like, I just find it so funny that she just elicits this, like, it's like football is so pure and so sacred in America. They're like, what? This pop star? No! Get her off the screen!
That's me. Old man River over here. That's me. I cannot stand it. I want to watch the game. I don't need to hear about every move that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce make, you know, off the field. Like, this video, ESPN is catering to it. Okay? ESPN is catering to it. Adam Schefter's tweeting, like, Taylor Swift's in the house. Donna Kelce's like, oh, she's Donna Kelce. Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce's mom is in Philadelphia for the game today. And then, oh, she's going to make her way to New York at MetLife Stadium to watch Travis Kelce and sit with Taylor Swift in the box to watch the game. No. It's maybe I'm just old. Maybe I'm getting to that point where I'm going to be like that middle-aged dude that's just going to freaking
hate everything.
Be pissed about everything. But like,
I'm cool with that though. Hitting
I don't want to see it. I don't need to see Taylor Swift every time Travis Kelce touches the ball. I don't need to see it. He catches the ball. All right, move on to the next play. I don't need to see her sitting in her box being like, ah, yay. I don't need
you
to
guys
see
follow
it.
Front Office Sports.
I do not.
No,
oh, it's a great, great media outlet. You guys check them out on Instagram.
No free ads. Fuck them.
fuck them. But more or less for you two. So they posted a picture and it said cutaways to Taylor Swift. Let me back up. Final stats from tonight's broadcast per our count. Cutaways to Taylor Swift, 17. So throughout the whole game, they showed Taylor Swift in that booth 17 motherfucking times.
So you know what's going to happen because of that? You're going to get people that are going to get in on that, get in with them.
Yeah.
And they're going to be in that box and they're going to pan to it and they'll be like, it's going to be, you're going to see some stupid celebrity come out and all of a sudden they're a big deal because they were in the box at an NFL game with Taylor Swift.
Once every 12
commercials for Taylor Swift's new movie. Two. So two different commercials for her movie, which I didn't even know she had a movie.
I didn't either.
Commercials with Travis Kelce and then three. commercials with Pat Mahomes 2 and the commercials with Andy Reid 1. But
Did you see the picture? Did you see the picture with her and the Lorax from the fucking Dr. Seuss book? And it just says, look who met Andy Reid after the game.
Oh my god. I can't. And I'm sure I'm gonna have rants about this all year because it's not going away. It's not going away anytime soon.
What happens when we find out which Vikings player is dating Lizzo? It's gonna be even worse.
Kirk Cousins.
I don't even want to get into this right now because I it's just gonna piss me off.
You see the NFL's Instagram bio?
Yes.
Tell
our listeners what it says. Go ahead.
So it says Chiefs are 2-0 with Swifties.
The NFL is like eating it up. Like that's where my thing comes from. Like you're professional sports league. You don't need to be catering to a music artist. And I know
they got rid of it.
They did get rid of it, huh?
They got rid of it. It's just CMC.
Yeah, because somebody let off.
I got my screenshot of it. Like
CMC for MVP question mark.
I'm gonna put it up on our Breaking the Plane Twitter handle. I'm gonna put it up after this episode and saying how does everybody feel about this? Because and I'll be the first one to comment on it. F this, dude. F this.
It's way too much.
But all right, I've gone on long enough about that. We do have another question from one of the primetime guys here. It's from Tommy Bennett at TJBennett37 on Twitter. Check him out. He's got a couple of he's got a podcast about the New Jersey Devils NHL franchise. Check him out and give him a follow. He's great with write ups on the Primetime Productions website. He does a great job with writing his thoughts down as well as having his podcast. And I love interacting with this guy. It's fun. He's a good dude. He's a big Raiders fan. So him and I have gone back and forth a little bit about the Patriots and so shout out to Tommy here. His question is, when can Josh McDaniels get fired? He needs details and hot takes. So just a little bit of background on Tommy. He's a big Raiders fan and he is not happy about Josh McDaniels. So Joe, how do you feel about Josh McDaniels in what he's done in changing the Las Vegas Raiders franchise since he took over last year?
What you have to look at is Mark Davis's only source of income is, I think, 3 PF Changs and the Raiders franchise.
Yep.
You're already playing. I don't know what happened with the lawsuit and the whole like John Gruden shit. And if they're still paying
pending,
John
I believe.
Gruden.
I think it's pending. Yeah. So
if you're paying John Gruden, then Josh McDaniels will be your coach. If you're not paying John Gruden, then he will not be your coach. Like that's, I hate doing like the whole money thing because football is obviously uncapped when you get off the field. But yeah, there's unless I don't know, like unless they can do like the fire him with due cause and like not pay, like they're not going to pay. They're paying Josh McDaniels good money. They're paying $10 million a year to John Gruden. He's not going anywhere. The Raiders are a fucking shit show. Awesome.
For me, it comes back to like the year before McDaniels was hired. They had Rich Bisaccia back there. He took him to the playoffs.
Derek Carr throw for 5,000 yards too?
He had a big year under him. And that was the year that John Gruden got fired for, you know, whatever he was into. We won't get into
being
that.
Being objectively bad guy through email.
Exactly. And, you know, he got in and he got that team going. And they didn't even make an attempt to, like, sign him as a head coach. Like, it seemed like the players rallied behind that guy. Hmm. And they got to the playoffs. Obviously, they fell on their face in the playoffs. But at the same time, like, he got them there. And Josh McDaniels comes in. We know his track record. He's had a little bit of a track record with coming in and switching quarterbacks and doing that whole thing from his time in Denver, you know, a decade or so ago. I don't think he's going anywhere from what you said, Joe. It's the money standpoint. The Raiders are broke. They don't have money because they keep firing their coaches after so many years, you know, not fulfilling their contracts. So they owe all these coaches all this money on their contracts. So I have to think maybe if the Raiders end up being like a 4-13 team, you'll see him go. But I don't see him getting fired in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't see that happening. And you know,
a brand
it doesn't
new stadium
help.
To fill too. So I don't think. Yeah. I don't know. That could be a saving grace though, because I think that there's a lot of seats in that stadium. I know that he doesn't outright own it. I know they got a lot of public money, but I think you obviously get money off ticket sales. So I don't know if that'll actually help his cause if they're selling that place out and they're making a little bit more of a return to kind of get him out of there. But the best thing, what Raiders fans have to hope is that they settle with Gruden, give him a lump sum, stop paying him, and then recoup that money on the new ticket sales of the big new stadium, and then get rid of Josh McDaniels after the year.
This is Josh McDaniels' last shot as a head coach in the league, in my opinion. I mean, he shouldn't have even gotten this second shot after what he did to Indianapolis a few years back, where he took the job and then backed out at the last second because the Patriots gave him more money. He's kind of tied his coattails to Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy who can win games. I always call him, he always wins. He always finds a way to win, but he didn't play this Sunday because he got hurt. Yeah. And if he's not going to be on the field for you, he got hurt last year with San Francisco, which is why we're, seeing Brock Purdy do what he doing what he does now. I think Jimmy Garoppolo could do exactly what Brock Purdy's doing in San Francisco, given that system.
Yeah, but Brock Purdy got hurt too.
Yeah, he got hurt and he came back, but he started the year this year. So he's looked really good in that system. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo could have done that. Jimmy Garoppolo won here in New England. He won in San Francisco when he took him to the Super Bowl. And, he should be able to do something here with Vegas. I mean, you got a number one receiver in Devontae Adams. You got a really good number two in Jacoby Myers. Patriots fans, I know you're probably mad that Bill Belichick didn't re-sign him, but he's an absolutely a stud number two receiver for that team. Mm. You still have Hunter Renfro. You got a really good running back in Josh Jacobs. That offense should be able to win games.
Darren Waller's in friggin'
he's gone. Yeah, he
Giants
left
now.
Yep. They have Foster. I think Foster Moreau might be hurt, but they also have Austin Hooper. So
okay,
serviceable. They have guys that can play on that offense. And, the whole Chandler Jones debacle, I mean, we can touch on that for a minute,
bro.
With this Coggett. Dude, I hope that dude gets some help.
Right. I don't want to get any jokes off. I just want him to get help.
Yeah, he needs to get himself some help. Because,
dude, there are some jokes to get off. But I think the biggest joke there is the Raiders organization.
Yes, I agree with that. And, I hope that I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys saw what was going on Twitter over the weekend. It was not good. It ended with him getting arrested. And it's not good. I really hope he gets some help. He's clearly not right in the head. So, we'll send some thoughts to him and hope he gets the help that he needs. Don't even want to even talk about football with him because obviously he'd be a big help for this team on the field, given his ability. But at the same time, mental health is number one. You got to get yourself right before you get into it. So there's just a big black cloud over the Raiders organization right now. And I mean, the money thing might be why Tom Brady is now a minority or working on being a minority owner of that team, because they need money. They need money. So Mark Davis is like, we'll give you a little bit of it. If you give us some investment here, we'll see what happens. To answer your question, Tommy, I don't think you're going to see him go away this season. I think we have to wait till the offseason before they can adjust something like that. So we're at about an hour and 12 minutes now. I think it's a good time to kind of plug it up here. We're a good length here for our inaugural episode.
Do we want to run through our picks before we get
the last thing I want to do before we close up shop is we want to talk about our walk for next week. We are going to be previewing next week's, the following week's games in this pod, as we go on here, in addition to breaking down what happened, the week before. Joe, what's your lock for this week here? We're going to use the DraftKings sportsbook, unofficial, no sponsorship here, although we'd love to have them here. But unofficial sportsbook of this podcast. Joe, what's your lock for next week?
So I got some picks that I like. I got three picks that I like, and then my lock of the week. So I'll run through my picks that I like real quick. Team we spent a little bit of time on just recently is San Fran. Right now you can get them at three, laying 3.5 at home versus Dallas. I know this is the divisional game. I think the Dallas is coming off 2 weeks in a row of versus inferior opponents where, to be totally honest, I don't think they looked good on offense in either of these games. I think losing Diggs versus a team like San Francisco is going to be a little bit tough because I think even though they do have Micah Parsons, I think San Fran has the perfect offensive line and scheme to kind of neutralize him if that's possible. So I love San Fran. You can get a good number on 3.5 on DraftKings right now. Another team we talked a little bit about today too is the Jets. I like the Jets at +2. I think there's some places that you can get it at 2.5. I love it at 2.5 as well. Something makes me want to say that that number is probably going to get a little smaller as the week goes on because Denver just absolutely blows cheeks at the game of football.
Absolutely.
Something I'm looking at in that game is Zach Wilson starting to make some strides in the passing game, and Denver sucks ass against the pass. I know it's inflated against that they did it against the they gave up 70 to the Dolphins, but I mean, dude, if you're giving up almost 400 passing yards a game, I mean, you're it's not all one game after four games, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Another game I liked, and with another team I spent a lot of time on, is Houston's getting two. You can find it at 2.5. They're playing the Falcons. The Falcons looked objectively terrible. I know it was a London game, weird spot, everything like that. They looked bad. Desmond Ridder looked bad. That defense didn't look great. They were turning the ball over, a little bit of a give up there. So I like getting the points Houston on the road. And then gets me to my lock of the week. I can see this being a, let me get to it on here just so I make sure that the line is still current. Oh, I'm 2 weeks ahead, but, so this is a get right game, a team that's 4-0, but I don't think has played anywhere close to their potential. I'm going to take Philly on the road laying 4 versus the Rams. The Rams looked like dog shit versus the Indy in the second half there versus a dual threat quarterback. Jalen Hurts, obviously one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the league. I think laying less than a touchdown to a team that's far superior, that's far inferior of you is, it should be what I think is an easy cover. So my lock of the week, lock it in right now. Eagles -4.
All right. That's a ballsy lock there, given how the Eagles have looked this year. You know, obviously they are 4-0. They haven't been tested. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Now I'm looking into this right now here. I'm not a big gambler, so we'll start with that. I'm not a big gambler when it comes to sports betting, but this is going to go in a little bit of what we touched on earlier in the pod this week here. I like Indy -1 against Tennessee this week. I know they had a big win this past week here. I'm just not sold on Ryan Tannehill in that offense. I know Derrick Henry can go off at any time, but he is getting older.
And we are getting into Tractor Cito season, yeah. Though. It is October.
I am a fan of Anthony Richardson, and I really do believe that, you know, they're laying 1 point in this game. So they're basically calling it a coin flip.
Where is that game?
It's in Indianapolis, so that's why they get the -1 on it. I do like them.
That really is a pick'em. You're right. Yeah,
I really like them to kind of assert themselves. I don't think Jonathan Taylor is going to play in this game. I know that, you know, I don't know if he's going to get activated or not, but like he is eligible to be activated. He's probably not going to play in that game. But you know, with Anthony Richardson, I'm a big fan. I've been a big fan of Michael Pittman since he was drafted. So I do like him. But their offense there, yeah, he's a big fan of him. And, you know, Zach Moss has done a great job filling in for Jonathan Taylor behind that offensive line in Indianapolis. So my lock of the week is going to be Indy -1. I do believe that Indianapolis is going to beat Tennessee in that game. But again, I'm picking a game in the dumpster fire division that is the AFC South. So it could go either way, but I'm in firmly in Indianapolis's camp. Another game to watch out for, and I'm going to be a homer a little bit on this, is the New Orleans Saints and the New England Patriots up in Gillette Stadium here in Foxborough, Massachusetts. I have a hard time seeing that the Patriots are going to be a team that's going to lay an egg 2 weeks in a row. I could be wrong. This could be a different year. But with the Saints, with Derek Carr, uncertain if he's going to play in this game. They're going to play Jameis Winston up in Gillette Stadium. I know that Jameis Winston has walked into Gillette Stadium and beaten the Patriots and Mac Jones a couple of years back.
Just need that for the entertainment factor. This game could be a wet fart.
Yeah, it could be I'm expecting an absolute garbage game out of this. But I do believe the Patriots are laying 1.5 on DraftKings right now. I do like the Patriots to bounce back and get a win no matter how ugly it is. So my lock of the week is Indianapolis -1. But my other pick for this week is the Patriots -1.5 in Gillette against the Saints. So
Kojak, I think that's the lowest total on the second lowest total on the board besides the Baltimore Pittsburgh game, another wet fart. But I don't know if you can get if that gets anywhere closer. So it's at 40.5 right now. But if that gets anywhere north of 41, I would probably take the under on that. 40 is a tough number, but this game's going to be 14-10, 13.
Dude,
13-6.
I really truly believe that it is going to be an under on that too. That would be another good bet for you to make. -108 right now on DraftKings. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out
a little bit.
Yeah, it probably will. I think it's going to move down. I would say it's going to move down. Both these teams are, you know, at a little bit of a crossroads. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where it plays out here. And I'm looking forward to another week of football. This is my favorite time of year. I don't know about you guys. Excuse me. I don't know. Sorry, I had a little bit of a coughing fit there.
No worries.
But I think that, you know, this is my favorite time of the year, like I was getting into. We got football. We got hockey starting up here in another 9 days with the Boston Bruins. And I know you guys both are big Celtics fans. We got that starting up soon. So this is a very, very exciting time for us as sports fans. We're getting out of the dog days of summer where we only had to watch baseball. And up here in New England, we had a really bad baseball team this year. And I'm not the biggest baseball fan to begin with. So it is great to get into it. I think we can, I think this is a good time to kind of plug it up here. You guys got any final thoughts?
No, I think, like I said, I'm very excited for things to come. I think we've got some good mojo going here. Excited to watch all my picks lose and come back on next week.
Kojak, you got anything to add?
No, I'm good, brother. I like it.
All right. All right. Sounds good. At this point, yeah. Again, thanks to Primetime for giving us a shot here. We are Breaking the Plane podcast here. You can follow us on Twitter at BTP_podcast_. I know it's a little bit of a weird handle. Unfortunately, that was the best we could get when we decided to start this sucker up. So give us a follow, give us a shout out. We'd love to hear from you. Get in our DMs. Let us know. I'm at Burge the Goalie. You can get Joe Scher, search Joe Scher on Twitter. Again, I don't remember your
at
handle.
The _ Juicy Jew.
There you go. There you go. And Kojak is at Allen13 Brennan. So get at us, slide in our DMs, give us some questions, give us some feedback. We look forward to hearing all of it. And yeah, we'll look forward to talking to you next week. So have a good week, guys.
Thank you all.
Later.